Welcome to episode 22 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is February 26th, 2012. I'm Matthew Furlough, and walking down the red carpet nominated for Best Co-host of 2012, I present James Furlough.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. It's been 22 long, hard-fought episodes, but we're still here.
Yeah, so I didn't watch any of the Oscars tonight, and I totally could have. But I slept instead.
I think you made a wise decision on your time there.
Yeah, man. I'll just listen to all the talk shows in the morning, make fun of it, and get everything I need. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology in the continuing corporate opera. That is the soap opera. That is corporations dealings back and forth. The people working for them, the marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. Before we get into the show, James is going to give us a short disclosure.
Yeah, so I work for HP, but I do not represent HP. So I should always say I, and if I ever say like we or something like that, which there's an HP story, so I meant to say I.
All right, duly noted.
I would also like to disclose that my computer was doing a weird dinging sound before the show. And so, if there's a ding in the podcast, there's a ding in the podcast. I obviously didn't get rid of it, but I can't tell right now, so we're fine.
Yeah. Just suffice it to say, as audience listeners right now, you guys can rest in the assurance that it's not annoying James and I. It's just annoying you. If you want to complain about the dinging noise, feel free to. You can do that on any of your Twitter accounts. You can go to @MatthewDFurlough.
And I am @JamesFurlough.
You can also go to @FurloughBros. That's where the main show feed is. And we got a pretty cool follower this week. Did you see that?
No. I don't get notifications. You're in charge.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I have to send that to you. Yeah. The family friendly podcast network is now following us
because we are
explicitly not explicit. So that we're family friendly. Woo!
Yeah. I'll take it. That's a badge of honor.
Yeah, so that's cool. And he's got a ton of followers and stuff, so hopefully, you know. If you're listening via that, welcome. You're going to get a great show tonight. Also, like always, you can go to and you can communicate with us through a couple of different forums. You can go to our website, furloughbros.com. I highly recommend you do that on your iPad or iPhone or Android phone, your mobile platform, because it's pretty sweet. We did a few updates. James did a few updates. I give credit where credit's due. But you can also go to the main show as well. That's still on their main website, rather. That's still normal. And then, of course, you can go to Facebook and Google+ and all over the internet. We are omnipresent. Worst case scenario, Google Furlough. You'll get there. So
I am in all of those. Yeah, in all of those updates, I did try to install a new plugin, and it totally. If you could do the equivalent of bricking a website, that did it. Yeah, it was pretty cool. I installed it, activated it, and it just went nothing.
Nice.
Like, oh, that's sweet. So I literally went in, FTP'd, deleted the files, and changed all the settings, and had to get it back to where it was. But there's that moment where you're like, "Oh, can I undo this?"
that's Unfortunately, as you kind of get deeper and deeper into the technologies, the undo buttons start to go away, and you realize how much complicated computing is required to actually be able to easily undo things. They don't put those sorts of safeties when you get, you know, kind of get into the forest on it. So,
well, they assume half rightly that you know what you're doing.
Yeah. Or at least you can figure it out.
Yeah. Which I did. So it's still up. So, or I should say is up again.
Nice. That's important. As we are an internet show.
Yeah. So speaking of the internet, news happened related to it today.
Yeah.
And I'm going to start actually with a follow-up from last week. Remember I was talking about Pinterest and how one of their ways that they make money and, you know, it's through affiliate links and this whole idea of copyright issues.
Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah, so they kind of had like a follow-up actually to that this week where they have come out with new code that basically allows websites to opt out of Pinterest. So it's a real quick meta tag that they put together. It just says, literally, it's like the name is Pinterest and the content is no pin. Super simple. If you put that up in your meta tag file of your website, they won't publish or copy your picture on your website.
Yeah.
And then they did something else, I think. Oh, they clarified their business model to, like, you know, about where they would potentially monetize from stuff. Remember, we talked about the affiliate links was kind of one of them. And then the other thing that they've done is they placed a character limit on the captions that people can put underneath the pins. And I think it's like 500. Yeah, it's 500 characters. The idea being you're not going to cut and paste an entire web page. It's literally just going to be a summary. And if they want the whole deal, they got to actually go to the original website.
500 characters is still a, you know, that's a pretty decent chunk, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's not bad. But it's fascinating, you know, that they're dealing with this whole copyright issue. And I don't know, it kind of, I was reading The Verge, they had a story kind of talking about it. And they were like, could you imagine, they're having to deal with stuff that other companies haven't had to deal with. Like, for example, they're like, could you imagine if Xerox or the VCR came out?
Oh, jeez, yeah.
You know, they just, whatever, make a copy, don't worry about it.
Yeah. You know, and back then, the different media companies were screaming that it was the end of their media as well, you know, and I think, you know, and obviously that wasn't true. It just helped the industry in the long run, and I think we're seeing the same thing again. You know, I think they're complaining and whining, but what they're not realizing is that it's the most efficient distribution channel that's ever existed. Instead of trying to take advantage of that and just compete on content, they're trying to shut it down and, you know, forcing people to, you know, do stupid things, figure out how to get around them. That was a long rant that had nothing to do with Pinterest. This does have to do with Pinterest, though. So did you hear that Flickr decided to take advantage of Pinterest's little disable code? Yeah, so and they're only doing it on copyrighted images is what they're saying. So
okay. So
you cannot pin copyrighted images via Flickr. So I caught this article earlier in the week and decided to just throw that in. So yeah, it is being taken advantage of. And you know, it's a thing now.
All I know is that it is encouraging me to find photos for the top of blog posts that stand on their own.
What do you mean?
So it's like it's one thing to find a photo that relates to the content, but now it's one where, like, I want the photo itself to be interesting enough where if that was all that you saw, you would still share it.
Yeah.
Because that's a big part of Pinterest. You see a picture, you go, oh, I like it. Boom, done.
Yeah. Nice.
And so it's causing me to up my game, which is good.
Your tastes are evolving. Cool.
Something like that.
Yeah. So
they're working on, you know, doing their privacy deals. We'll see where this goes. It's clearly a long road ahead for them, but they're making money, so it's a worthwhile road, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously. I'd love to deal with the problems they deal with. Monday turns out was kind of the it was the day for catching up with the week's article, what happened the week before. So we got another follow-up. Obviously, OS X Mountain Lion was released, and people are still chatting feverishly about it. And one of the things that I've seen a lot of from like really legit sources, like this one came from the one example I'm going to give, it came from CNN Tech because I thought it was a particularly egregious example of lame reporting. The article is titled "Why Apple Didn't Include Siri in OS X Mountain Lion," and so they have this really long article where they cover all sorts of things like microphone logistics and the problems of making sure everyone has a microphone, location detection because of how it's integrated with Siri, basically saying Siri's not really needed for your computer is one of the reasons. They said there's a limited use case, your data's always on, kind of a long multi-point thought on why Siri wasn't included. And I bring this as an example because one of the things you'll see in a lot of articles is arguments back and forth between why there was one feature and why there isn't another feature. And I just like to say that this wasn't the official announcement for OS X Mountain Lion. This was a developer's preview announcement. Siri will be coming to Mountain Lion. They just haven't announced it yet.
All right. Are you
There's
going on the
been
record for that prediction?
oh, I guarantee it. And the example I give is,
Ooh, he
is
guarantees it.
well, the thing is that when they announced iOS 5, they announced a whole slew of new features and apps. And one of the one that I always think of is
Reminders.
location-based reminders was the one that I always come back to because it was a task that seemed so cool at the time, but you never really gave heed. They didn't show you them doing it, so you didn't really think about how difficult it would be from a UI perspective to try to set up a net or a geofence with your fingers. You just kind of went, if I really need it, maybe I'll do it. But when you think about it, it would be kind of a time-consuming process, whereas Siri makes it instantaneous. And so they're willing to announce features that literally don't make sense unless you have some other feature and
So
not
what's
announce
that
the lead
example
feature.
in Mountain Lion?
Well, I just think it's everything. I mean,
Oh.
I think Siri has deep integration, and I think as time goes on, you'll see Siri getting more and more deeply integrated. And I think all of their excuses are lame. The question that I have is, why wouldn't they? Microphone logistics is stupid. Every Mac comes with a microphone, and they're some of the best in the best built-in microphones in the that you can buy with a consumer-grade laptop. Location detection, hello, every router has some sort of a location-based thing. And hands-free voice control isn't needed. Well, yeah, it may not be needed for the current feature set, but as soon as you have it, you'll start to develop features that take advantage of it. I mean, and that's what's going on with Siri right now is, people are coming up with ideas. Now that you have the option, you want to use it. Always on data is dumb. Have you ever kept track of your inputs and outputs on your network? Your data is always on. I mean, it's just one of those things where. And anyways, I mean, Siri, like I said, Siri, it was CNN Tech, via Wired. It's these legit news sources, and it's just stupid. My point is, wait until the actual announcement before you try to logic through why they did or didn't do something. Especially something that's as obvious as Siri, which I guess the only reason why they wouldn't bring Siri to it is if, for example, they don't bring Siri to the iPad 3 in a couple of weeks. That would be the only case where I would think it would be go. That would introduce some doubt, in my opinion. But I just don't
Okay.
like other. I don't like other reporters that don't know what they're talking about.
Fun. I honestly, I don't know. I don't necessarily have any use case for it. But I mostly use Siri while driving, so, and I'm probably not going to be driving around with my desktop computer.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's one of those things where it's like,
I could see theoretically. I'm watching a YouTube video, and I could say, you know, play next or something, and then it doesn't do that.
Yeah, I could just
that
see.
That sounds hard to do, but that's more of an Apple TV thing. But
if the thing is that if you integrate it into Apple TV, and I guess that's my point, is if it's coming to Apple TV, there are certain uses that it'll make sense for. Your iTunes, it'll make, you know, anything you're doing with iTunes, playing video, playing music, stuff where you don't necessarily have to be sitting at your computer for some specific productivity-related thing. You know, you sit there and you go, if I'm not actually, which I don't know about you, but I use my computer all the time, playing music in the background, and it'd be nice to be able to yell at my computer and say, you know, hey, do this instead of this, make this note, you know, bring up this web page. I feel like a smart AI based interaction, you know, where you can actually, where it understands what you're saying, you know, can do Google searches and stuff, and it's constantly listening for you. I guess that's the big thing, you know, where you can just say, hey, Siri, you know, can you Google this for me? Really, you know, how many cups are in a
But see, I want to be able to do that while in the kitchen with my computer stored away somewhere in the closet where I can't even see it. And then it just speaks it back to me. You know, so there's microphones and speakers everywhere. Think Star Trek. I want that.
Well, you want an AirPlay integrated system with your computer, which I think is what everybody wants. And I think that's what's coming. You know, I just get the feeling that it's like...
I pull my phone out of my pocket because it's right with me and use that.
Yeah, you could do that. But I guess my question is, why wouldn't you introduce it? You know, I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense.
It's a distraction. I think one of the reasons why Apple's successful is they say you have to have a really good reason to introduce it. Otherwise, no, we're not doing it just for the fun of it.
Yeah, but the whole point of Lion and is this idea that they're integrating their you know, stuff starts on the iPhone, it moves to the iPad. The iPad is sort of this bridge between OS X. They looked at it as this bridge between OS X and the iPhone. And if it comes to the iPad and it comes to Apple TV and it becomes part of the user experience, it becomes part of their UI philosophy, why wouldn't they bring it to OS X?
I understand what you were saying. I think it's a very different philosophy than that. I honestly think, you know, their whole thing is we're cutting stuff out. We're not going to add. You know, they're going to be very selective about what it is that they do. I don't think they say, though, why not? I don't know.
Well, I guess what my point is that it's, you know, is Apple is more than willing to add features that don't necessarily have a specific use, but open up possibilities. You know, like a touchscreen or apps or, you know.
I guess the thing that's like with an iOS device, because it doesn't have like multitasking, classic multitasking. How's that drink? Does that taste good?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds delicious.
You can hear it. Sorry.
that's all right. So I think like with iOS devices, it's easy to do things like Siri, because it does one thing at a time and you got to press a button, you know, it's that always on stuff. Whereas, and even like an Apple TV, it's all very similar architecture, but in order to do that on a classic type of desktop, which, you know, Mountain Lion is still classic desktop as you can get. They're not taking anything away yet. They're still adding features. I don't know. That is a significantly more difficult engineering thing to do to make it useful outside of one or two things. I mean, what I'm really going to speak a Google search.
It's the whole dragon dictation platform, I think. And I think it's one of those things where I do believe that, you know, it's it's the ability to dictate and take your hands off of the.
Well, they already have that. Just saying that they already have that. You're just saying that, and no one uses it.
They do. They already have dragon dictation built plus, into.
They got their own version of it, but yeah.
Well, but I guess that's. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I would be really surprised. I would be really surprised. I guess it makes a lot of sense why they wouldn't announce it early on, especially pre iPad, because they
want to
generate buzz around iPad. And you know,
I agree with you. If they were to unveil it, it would not be until there was some new hardware or whatever.
Thank you.
I agree with that. I don't think they're going to this round, at least.
Well, time will tell how right I am.
Yeah. Well, yes, it will.
All right. Y'all, let's. It's stupid. Anyways, let's move on to something. Let's move on to something funny.
Hey, we disagree. That's allowed. That's allowed.
So Microsoft's gearing up. They're trying to remind people of something. I feel like over the. There's a reason for this sort of long introduction to this video. I think Microsoft is trying to remind people why you choose Microsoft. I think there's been a real feeling. I think they've been at the butt end of a lot of jokes, and I feel like a lot of people get excited about Google, what Google's doing, what Apple's doing. And they forget why Microsoft. When the truth is that there, you know, and we've said this on the show before, but there are a few things that Microsoft does that they just do better than everybody else, and their core competencies, really and truly. And one of those is the Microsoft Office suite, and. Microsoft took a pretty good shot at Google. And I say this talking about, man, I wish we could play this video for you guys, but I highly recommend you go and check out the Googlighting. So it's Googlighting.
All right, here.
Listening live. Thank you.
Let's see here if I can do this. New window. Had I been on top of it, I would have had this already queued. But let's see if the beeping's back or still there now that I unmute my computer.
Do you want me to try to – I already have it loaded up. Do you want to try it
online?
Well,
the nice part about mine is I could just play it in the speakers, then it'll catch it in my microphone and then feed it back. Yeah, that's the technicality because it actually doesn't collect any sound from my computer, which is weird. But – it works. And I have multiple computers, so I can get away with it.
Cool. Well, so while you're loading it up, I'll kind of get into this. Basically, there's this dude. He's wearing like an all-white jacket, and he's got a multicolored necktie, and he's the Googlighter, as they talk it. So he's it's kind of a moonlighter joke. Anyways, it sounds like we got sound. Let's go.
I think we're good. All right.
Roll the clip.
Rule the clip.
He's top of his game.
He's on top of his game. Searches online.
For you in this downtown.
All right.
Hello. Good afternoon. I'm here for my 4:30.
It's 5:30.
We should be ready for that.
Sit down, Mr. Appleson.
Please, my mom calls me that.
So you have 12 years experience in app sales. Why do you want to work for us?
I've been developing cloud collaboration and productivity software, and I'd like you to implement that across your entire company.
Wait, you want us to be your lab rats?
Pioneers.
My employees live on Excel and PowerPoint. Does it work like those?
Potentially.
Does it have that in spellcheck? Had a chance?
I'm not sure what that is.
What if my employees need to make revisions while they're on the road?
Don't worry about it. You ask so many questions.
Can they do that? If they have internet. And you still think this is ready to roll out?
How else are we going to know what features to keep and what to do?
Okay, hold on, hold on. So you're going to change your software while we're using it?
Absolutely.
Wait, but I could come to work and the software could be different from the day before.
Different, better, completely gone. Who knows what the future holds for Google Ops.
So, you can kill it now. They just sing for a bit more. So that was so basically if you're having a hard time hearing it, basically it's Google is interviewing with a business lady, and they're going through all the reasons why Google has no credibility and has no consistency, and why you shouldn't go with them. And they bring up obvious things like the fact that, you know, the features could just disappear, stuff like that. And I think it's important to mention that I don't actually have Microsoft Office Suite on my computer. I only used Google. So I really like the Google Documents. But that being said, Google's track record is a consistent of consistency isn't the best. features have come and gone from Google Documents in the past, and if you relied on them,
yeah,
you know,
I don't know if I haven't noticed the gone. I've noticed changes, obviously. Just for the record, we do use Google Docs for this show, so
right, exactly,
and it works awesome.
Right, so we're fans. I mean, it's a good product, but I still think that Microsoft. I did like the pivot table jab. Does it do pivot tables? I don't even know what that is. Yeah. you know, which is our constant complaint is, you know, documents are easy to do, but the Excel is sort of a first-in-class program.
Well, yeah, and I mean, and the thing about Google Docs is it's awesome for collaboration, which is why it works perfectly for what we're doing. You know, it's not super complicated, and we can collaborate on it, and that's sweet. You know, and it's super useful. I like that you can go across devices, across machines, and I happen to have an internet connection fairly often, so that works well. Having said that, when I got my Mac, I was like, I'm going to do iWork. I made it about a month before I was like, I cannot use iWork at all, and Google Docs isn't doing it for me. I have to get Office. And I've been very happy with that decision.
You know, it's funny. I haven't done a lot of writing, but I'm hoping to do some more as this year goes on. And at some point in the near future, I'm going to need to get it just to use Word, because, I mean, just from a performance perspective, that's actually my biggest complaint with Google Documents is the performance is really low because it's all browser-based.
So what do you mean by that? I don't know what that means. Like when you type, it takes a while for the letters to show
up? Yeah, it takes a few seconds for the letters to show up. And formatting isn't as nice and as easy to do. And big documents cause really big, you know, which when I'm writing, the documents get huge.
Yeah, all right.
And so fair it's, enough. You know. So I want a native, powerful word processor, and I don't have that with Google Documents. So,
OpenOffice, man.
OpenOffice. I tried OpenOffice. Well, I didn't give them a fair shake. I've actually been thinking I should give them a fair shake. But the problem is that it's, you know, it's sort of – I know Office is expensive, but if all I need is Word, PowerPoint, all I really want is Word, PowerPoint, and Excel – I kind of just want Word, PowerPoint, and Excel, you know? If I can afford it, I think I'm going to go for it. And I guess that's where I'm at. And because, you know, there's a reason. They're actually great programs. And I think what's going to be interesting for Google over time, the big question that I have is, how is Google going to do documents differently so that people can be confident in Google Docs? I still feel like there's a real – people are really, really, really tentative to make that leap to Google Docs, especially small business people. And I don't feel like – you know, people who go people who bought iPhones to use it outside of work liked it so much that they demanded to be able to use it at work, and their iPhones got adopted, you know, into the corporate world. And the same thing happens with Android phones. But I don't feel like that same movement is happening with Google Docs. I feel like people are just fine using, you know, using Office when they get to work, and even if they use Google Docs at home. So I don't know. It's sort of I think Google has an uphill battle, and I'm not exactly sure what they're going to have to do. I think performance is a big issue for people. I think the idea of having a native option is, you know, still kind of a big deal for people. I think if they could do those two things, that would go a long way. And just sticking with it and not giving up on the product over the years.
Well, yeah, and one of the things that they got to think about too, like we talked about, like collaboration is huge. But on the other hand, if you have an Excel spreadsheet in a Dropbox folder, that's pretty close to collaboration.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't do synchronous editing, but you can do asynchronous editing, and that's pretty nice. I don't know. I think there's room for all of them, and there's different purposes for each of them. I actually I do all of my financial management on Google Docs. As crazy as it sounds. But the nice part about it is I could be on any browser and my wife can see it and can look at it and go, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that, you know, makes sense to me. I think it makes sense in certain circumstances for sure.
Yeah.
I use Notepad for most of my notes. I don't like having
markup. Oh yeah, me too.
I don't like having markup if I can get away with it. Which for those of you who don't know, that's all of your formatting stuff for documents. and for short documents, like what we do for the show, simple spreadsheets where even if, you know, where you're talking tops a couple hundred rows and a couple of columns, I think they make sense, but I think anytime you get beyond that, where you actually get into bigger data sets in Excel or longer documents with a lot of formatting and stuff like that, I think that that's definitely when, for power users, I think Google Docs stops making sense really, really, really quickly, as compared to its Office, you know, counterpart.
You want to know what probably my favorite feature of Excel is? This is so superficial, but
what?
It is. I like the copy format feature on Excel, and I like that you can do let's say I have a cell that's like it's green shade and it's bold font and
something
like that, yeah. And I can say copy this format into this cell over here,
nice.
And it's super, and it does it. It's like you click once, and then the next cell that you click on, it's going to copy it. But what I really like is you can literally do it for a block of cells, and it will do it for all of them.
Yeah.
And go, all right, boom, we'll copy the entire thing. I haven't seen anything else that does that. I am just superficial enough, and I want it to look just right, where that's a big deal to me.
I don't, you know, it's funny. I think there's a tremendous number of people, though, that feel the same way. You know, people who get real power users want a document that's easy to read and that looks nice and you want to be able to do it quickly. And especially on Excel where things, you know, that's the most impressive part about Excel is that it's almost intelligent it is intelligent in recognizing what data is where. So it's like, so it can figure out what formatting needs to go where and stuff, and you can kind of quickly manage all that. There's a lot of back end there that's really impressive. A web-based text editor, document thing, a web-based spreadsheet. Those are impressive technologies, but it's hard to beat a native version. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Well, that'll come back around later in the show, so we'll move on for now. I just wanted quick announcements about my favorite failing company. Research in Motion, there was a, The Verge did a fantastic article. I don't want to get into it too much. As much as I want to recommend you read it, they basically, the title of the article is Research No Motion, How the BlackBerry CEOs Lost an Empire, and it's by Jesse Hicks. It's on TheVerge.com. You can go to Furlough Bros and check it out, but it is one of the best articles I've read that kind of that talked about what happened and why it happened. It's just and what it is it's really well written. They've just got some moments over the last few years, like John Lazarus, his whole breakdown during an interview when right after BlackBerry had all the blackouts.
Dude, and I was in India during that time. That was awesome. Yeah. They played it way up, even in India.
Oh man, and he just, you know, and just how stupid everything comes across. They talk about the playbook and why it's failing as bad as it is. And just how ill prepared he was as a CEO to really kind of take them where they needed to go. And what it is is they're nice to him in that they give him an honest look and say, you know, he obviously got to where he was for a reason. He's not completely incompetent. But this is why it's not working. It's kind of a long article, but it was, I thought it was an enjoyable read. So I recommend it. That being said,
this is like, you have way too much time on the weekend. You should read it.
Yeah. It's not a blog post.
This took them a long time to put together.
Yeah. And it's really, really well written. I mean, I don't read articles like that very often. I do it, and when I say not very often, I mean I do it once a quarter. and it was worth it. The whole thing on my iPod Touch, too. That's the other nice part, is it's really kind of well formatted. It looks nice no matter what device you're on. So I recommend you read it if you got the time, but it's really good. And then the other two things that I wanted to mention, Netflix has made it clear they have absolutely no intention of supporting RIM's tablets.
Which is pretty crazy because they're like, we want to be everywhere.
Yeah, and they just and when you think about RIM's commercials, you know, attacking the iPad is, you know, we're the tablet that can do everything. We're the tablet for serious people who don't want a limited platform, and you know, and then Netflix won't support your device. Like, too bad. I guess you don't really want everything. And talking about how they don't have everything, so they finally got this. You know, when the device first launched, it launched without a native email client, which is one of just the ridiculous things that if you remember back to that whole thing where it was like RIM's entire argument was that they're the best when it comes to email, they're for email addicts. That was the CrackBerry, you know, or the, you know, it's not a BlackBerry, it's a CrackBerry, it's for people that just can't give up their email.
Yeah,
I mean that was the whole thing, and the playbook launched without a native email client. What?
Well, their reasoning was it would help them sell more phones because you'd have to have a phone in order to do it. And it's just like, yeah, from a sales internal perspective, I get it. But you really should have at least thought about your customers for 2 seconds in that decision process.
Yeah. So
I don't get it. If you're good at email, it would have been interesting to be in on those strategic meetings when they decided to cut it. And I literally think it was because they thought they could sell more phones.
I know that's what it is. I mean, they said that as much. You know, it was sort of a – they didn't want to cut into – they you know, they're two different devices for two different things.
Sure.
So stupid. Anyways, so they said they were going to update it and bring it to it, big software update. They finally showed up this week, and I guess from what I was reading in the reviews, it's terrible. It's still terrible. There's just they're like the email client doesn't work. There's huge bugs.
Seriously?
It's just like, what are you guys doing? What are you doing with your lives?
Well, you know, there's still a small startup taking on the establishment, so
I know.
Can't expect it to be perfect.
I know. Well, you know. These computer guys aren't going to come in here and, well, that was Paul. it's crazy. Blows my mind. Anyways, that's your weekly RIM update. No, they're just doing fantastic. And then I feel like I got a lot of articles this early.
Well, here, I will, I'll cut you off and I'll do mine.
Okay.
Earlier. So this man got served on Facebook. Literally.
Got served.
Yeah, on a gadget. It says, being unceremoniously dumped online isn't the only indignation made easier by social networks. For the first time, lawyers in the UK have been granted permission to serve a legal suit on Facebook. Dude, seriously, you're chewing ice? Unbelievable.
I had it on mute. How did you hear me? I had it on mute.
No, I listened to you take a big squig and chew ice. I don't know. Technology.
Google Hangout is just...
technology.
I am not a fan of Google Hangout right now. I was like, okay, I'll he's talking. This is a good time. I'll hit mute. I'll take a little drink. I'll chew a little ice, and I'll come back and...
That's make so a pippy stupid. Comment.
That's so stupid.
I was like, I can let the drinking go, no big deal. But then the chewing of the ice, I was like... I should probably mention something, because he probably thinks he's on mute. So, anyways, speaking of being totally embarrassed publicly, so this UK lawyers were granted permission to serve a legal notice via Facebook.
Yeah.
So traditionally, they have to be like physically delivered, either in person or by post or fax. But this was the first time, I guess like none of those were working. And this dude like did recent updates on Facebook, so they were able to prove that, you know, he was active and visiting. And so the judge gave him permission to serve a legal notice on Facebook.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. Actually, it doesn't talk about what the outcome was, but pretty interesting that you could, you know, at least in the UK, one judge was like, "Yeah, let's go for it."
I wonder what that trend will be from now on. People are gonna get more and more willing to accept that. That'll be something that will be fun and interesting to watch.
I wonder how that like it makes you want to make sure your settings are like friends only or something. You're gonna go get into trouble.
Yeah. I'd like to live a life that doesn't require that, but you know, sometimes you don't get that lucky, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know. Hey, if we're doing our job right, we'll get sued at one point in time.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, that's our goal, right? I mean, we've already talked about our logo.
What about our logo? I don't get it. Definitely, no companies like Nintendo should be upset about
no,
that's for sure.
No. I don't know why they would be.
Yeah.
So, anyways, that's my Facebook story.
Cool. Nice. Cool.
It's kind of an interesting...
Yeah.
Small step for technology, big leap for man.
Or yeah, food for
one
thought.
One of those ways.
But it was a shock for that dude, you know, being like, this can't even... You know, oh, you know what, though? Now that I'm thinking about it, could you imagine that? It'd be like getting one of those emails where, like, you know, It looks like an eBay email. I mean, it looks just like it. But they're like, you know, click here and you can get like a free iPad for like $3. I guess it wouldn't be free, but like iPads for $3 via eBay. All you have to do is give us all this personal information and just give us your password really quick to reconfirm, and we'll give it to you. I'll bet that's what it felt like. I'll bet he had to sit there for like 20 minutes going, "This isn't real. This is a joke. This is fake." Like, how would you, like, that must have been an emotional roller coaster ride. Because it just would seem completely surreal.
I'd probably just delete it or ignore it and move on with my life.
Exactly. Great, the scammers have come up with a new one.
Yeah, well, they're good at it.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
So I want to alert everybody to a impending doom. CNN Money has alerted us that the internet is on the verge of breaking, probably this year
again,
or the next.
Oh no!
Yeah, and this time it's a fundamental problem of the internet that can't be fixed by anything. And it's already, we're doomed. Basically, what they're saying is we're running out of spectrum, the spectrum are the invisible rays that float around our heads and allow us to connect to each other.
Isn't that the force?
What?
Isn't that the force?
Yeah, something like that. It's similar to that. It's actually electromagnetic radiation.
Midichlorians in our blood? Or mitochlorine, whatever.
You know, for most people, I gotta believe that they're about on par in their level of understanding. Our audience is obviously smart enough where they know what all this is. But in case you're
our audience is smart.
Yeah. But in case you're part of that small group that not quite sure what we're talking about, all transmissions are done in the electromagnetic radiation spectrum. That has to do with that's where light occurs. And different parts of the spectrum allow you to do different things, like X-rays and ultraviolet and color, all that fun stuff. But part of those radio waves, part of that spectrum, is what allows us to communicate. And there's only a small band of it that we can use for communication. The FCC regulates it, and a bunch of people own it. And basically what they're saying is that we don't have enough, and the pipe is too small is the best way to describe it. There's a certain amount of traffic that can exist through that band, and the limitation on it is how much of a band there is. And so this article basically talks about, like, they have a couple graphs about usage, and usage just skyrocketing for people, and how as time goes on, the internet is going to collapse because they're just data will be really slow, and you know, your voice calls won't work, and all sorts of terrible things will happen because there's just not enough spectrum. I think
I'm getting the sense that you're mocking them. Or is
Okay. That's where I'm going with this because it seems really.
Okay.
Basically, this seems like lip service to. The cell phone companies. It seems like it's sort of they're setting the groundwork for what is obvious has been obvious on this show for a while, and I think is obvious to anybody who's paying attention, which is they're not charging enough for data. They haven't been. They should have been charging more from the get-go. They didn't really expect what they were supposed to do. But you have to think of spectrum as sort of like a land mass or a land deal. There's only so much land, and the government regulates it. Part of it is protected for one reason or another, and then large chunks of it are either devoted to, you know, the government or to military, and then a certain part of it is open to large corporations that have bought up big chunks of it, big swaths of land. And then there are small swaths that are just kind of open for use, like, you know, with your Wi-Fi and everything. And the thing is that if you run out of land and you're renting all of this land and there's more people who want to live on the land than there is land, what happens? Rent goes up. It's really simple, like real simple economics. Basically, what the conclusion here that they don't come to is that they're probably going to try to squeeze out a little more band from the FCC. They're going to have to raise prices. And what's going to end up eventually happening for all of you that are that concerned about this is we're going to hit a wall, and it probably won't be next year, but over the next 10 years, where costs will go up because there's two ways to increase speed. One is data compression. The data that you're sending, the more compact it is, the speed at which you send it can increase, or you can have the number of wires that you have to send it. Well, it's like we have a limited number of wires, so our only option is to send the data faster and to compress it more, which is exactly what we're going to do. And they'll build all sorts of crazy technologies to take advantage of the broadband that we do have. And I think eventually what you'll start to see is more and more mini cells popping up that take advantage of more complex systems like long-distance Wi-Fi that can handle many, many clients. And you'll see a more ubiquity in the where we move away from cell towers for wireless broadband so much and move towards blanketing entire areas in, in more local broadband.
Yeah, well, wasn't that what WiMAX or whatever that was?
Yeah, WiMAX.
WiMAX.
Yeah, there's a bunch of there's huge technologies out there, and they deal with being able to talk with many devices, and sort of how they all interact with each other. This actually isn't a big problem. CNN money just like. They make this, it's all doom and gloom, and it's not a big deal, but I think what you are going to see, the consequences of this, in the immediate future, you're going to see data prices go up and up and up and up and up as we find a balance. It's going to get really expensive to the point where it will make less sense to have data plans, and so other technologies are going to emerge that are more localized and cheaper that allow for wireless data consumption that support that require less band or require less spectrum, and that's going to be the long-term solution. So silly CNN money.
I wish I understood more about how all that stuff worked, but all I know is that it actually bugs me that their side column is the same width as their main column. Just kind of tells you where the priorities are.
On the you mean on the web on the
on CNN Money's webpage.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you mean. Yeah, I guess your content's not that important.
That's all right. Well, interesting. Like I said, I don't know enough about it to, make an informed comment. Yeah. I'm sure there's other solutions out there.
Good. That means you can't contradict me this time.
Yeah. Exactly. So you might have thought that we were done talking about Apple and Microsoft, but we're not. There was a cool article. There were a couple of them, and I don't actually know what where the first one was. So I'm going to pick my favorite one. By M.G. Siegler. He basically it says, what if Office for iPad was revealed during Apple's keynote when they unveiled the iPad 3?
Whoa.
Because I guess there's been this whole like back and forth where the Daily, which again it's an app for the iPad, and it might be for other, I think they said they're coming out for other devices too. Basically they were like, it's coming, it's here. And then Microsoft was like, it's not. And Daily was like, yes, it is. Then Microsoft was like, no, it's not, but we didn't say it's not coming. And then the Daily was like, a Microsoft employee showed it to us. And then Microsoft was like, no, they didn't. You're mistaken. And the Daily was like, no, we're not. And Microsoft said, stay tuned.
That's awesome.
Yeah, pretty fun. So what if Microsoft gets on stage could you imagine this? Steve Ballmer comes on stage with, totally blanking on his name.
Tim Cook.
With Tim Cook to replace the Steve Jobs and, oh my gosh, I must be really tired. And
Bill Gates?
No, not Bill Gates. No, okay. Bill Gates. Eric Schmidt. Remember when they first came with the iPhone? Eric Schmidt came on stage a couple times to talk about all the googly, apps that they were doing for
him. Oh yeah, yeah.
And all the goodness. But what if it's like, no, now you know, Google's out, Microsoft is coming in. I think that would be M.G. Siegler goes on to say, like, both Apple, you know, it's, what is it? If your friend's enemy is your enemy's friend, or...
The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. Oh, I'm doing great.
Yeah, man.
But they were like, you know, Apple, Microsoft, okay, yeah, sure, they compete, but for whatever reason, they seem to have some sort of, you know, agreeance with life. However, both of them are not friends with Google whatsoever. And if this is an opportunity for Microsoft to go, oh, check it out. We have offices for the iPad because, you know, they still sell that software like we talked about, and they still sell a lot of it, and it's still a huge cash cow for them, and it makes sense to move on to whatever the latest platforms are because they also offer it for the Mac. And then say, oh, yeah, plus, you know, it's available for Windows 8 on our new Touch Awesome interface for tablets in addition to just the standard, which you can get normally. And they're just like... and pretty much give a big middle finger to Android.
Yeah, you know, because right now...
I can see Microsoft doing it. I can see
them... You know, I don't think there's any reason for them not to do it. You know, obviously, they're working on all the UI stuff for Metro, for Windows Metro. So yeah. The UI stuff is all there. It's all taken care of. Now you just have to write it in Cocoa and for the iPad. Which is not a small task, I'll give you that, but fundamentally...
Well, and you know, it's not going to have pivot tables, and it's going to be very, I don't know, feel like it could be read-only, and that'd be cool. But
so, yeah, you know, that's true, but I have a little more confidence in Microsoft, which might be a little more, misplaced, and maybe it's just optimism, but this is my thing. This is where I'm coming from. Microsoft, and the reason why I, you know, when you said, you know, it's like Ballmer and Cook are replacing Jobs and Gates, and that's why I threw out Gates. It's because if you remember, if you think back, before Microsoft introduced Windows, they were on stage with, Bill Gates was on stage with Steve Jobs, when they introduced the Macintosh and they introduced Word or the Office suite for the Macintosh. I mean, that was a big deal, and it was an acknowledgement of the fact that their platform's bigger than ours. You know, we gotta make our money where we can. And I think as far as Microsoft is concerned, if you bring Office to the iPad, you give people – it's not as compelling of a reason to come to Microsoft. But the thing is – you know, to pick up a Microsoft tablet. But the thing is if – in my opinion, if you have a ubiquity of a platform, your Word document, your Excel and PowerPoint work seamlessly across – every Mac, every Windows PC, every Unix box, every Microsoft tablet, every Microsoft phone. I mean, if it works everywhere and it works on the iPad, basically what you're going to do is you're going to stop people from wanting to buy or needing to buy Word, Numbers, and Pages. Or Word, right. Sorry, Pages, Numbers, and Keynote. Right. And what you do... is it's kind of like Apple opening up their playlist so that other companies can use, you know, you can buy iTunes and you can download your music. You have to build your own client to kind of do the communication, but any device can connect to iTunes and download music from iTunes. Apple has opened it up because as far as Apple's concerned, they wanted to be your portal for buying music. And what that means is that you're more likely to buy an device because if you start out somewhere else, if you started with a Zune or you started with an Android or you started with a Palm or you started with, doesn't matter where you start, you can buy your music through iTunes. You can even try out a different platform and stick with iTunes. And so everything stays, all your data, all your content stays iTunes-centric, stays Apple-centric, which is why it's such an anchor. And I think for Microsoft, Office is such a massive anchor for people that I think by bringing a full, real Office client to the iPad will long-term help Microsoft tablet sales. I actually think they'd be making a huge mistake by not introducing a real platform, because it means that people are going to get more and more invested in the Apple ecosystem. And I think by Apple allowing them to come in and then bringing a real software to the platform, I actually think it melds the two ecosystems, and I think that works in Microsoft's favor in this case.
But I bet that just total conspiracy theory, no data or proof whatsoever, but I've got to imagine that this in some way is Microsoft extending the olive branch, saying, hey, we'll help you out. We'll bring Office to your iPad. It's going to help you sell iPads. It's going to help you beat Android. Oh, by the way, when Siri does a search, is it possible if she talks to Bing instead?
Oh, my gosh. I didn't even think about that. But that could be huge. You're absolutely right. I mean, you know, there's a, you know, Apple and Google aren't on great terms right now, and I know that they're building their own, like we talked earlier a couple weeks ago, you know, Maps is designed and managed by Apple, but all of the underlying map content is provided by Google. Well, Apple's working on doing that on their own because they don't want to rely on Google for that anymore, and I could see them moving away from Google. That could be huge. I think you're starting to see a collaboration between the two companies, similar to what you saw when both companies were young, because they think the same in a lot of ways. You know, they're ironically, since it's the think different company, I think that there's a shared mentality there, and kind of a mutual respect. Of the old guys, that they don't share those feelings with Google at all. And it comes back to that video of Microsoft trashing on Google, and it was kind of a goofy video, but it's this whole idea of they really look at Google as the young punks that aren't going to do you any favors. They're just trying to be cool. You know, I think the word that the description you're supposed to come away from when it comes to Microsoft's opinion of Google is Microsoft thinks Google is a bunch of tools. They really, you know, they don't like them. They don't respect, Microsoft doesn't respect them as a real professional platform. And, and when it comes to Office, it's I think Google's, it's an exciting platform, but I think Microsoft's got them beat. I think it could, yeah, I agree. I think it'll help, it will really help both platforms. And I think they're both at a point where they're willing to, you know, Bill Gates is off doing his thing. Steve Jobs is off doing his thing. because the legacy competition is gone, I actually think, I think that's, you know, even though Steve Jobs and Bill Gates were friends, I still think they were deeply competitive against each other. They liked each other. But I think what you're seeing now, I think what you're going to continue to see is that they're going to be willing to mess around with the idea of maybe we can actually work together now that the old guard is gone.
We'll see. I mean, there's still no evidence on that.
Office for iPad is coming. They may not be on stage together, but I do think that it's we'll see. This is kind of highly conjecture at this point, but that's what it feels like that's where it feels like we're going.
So. All right. We will see. In the meantime, not muted right now, just so you know. In the meantime.
Oh.
Just thought I'd let you know that. Let's talk about a little HP and how they did. They came out with their revenue numbers. I figured I took the time to bash on Sony. It's only fair to bash on myself. I mean, on HP. Let's keep that split there. So Q1 came out, and HP did okay. Well, it didn't do great. Revenue was down 7%, and net income was down 44%. Software sales were up, though, 30%.
Which is great, because you guys are huge software retailers, right?
Well, it's funny.
You guys, HP is...
Yeah, so it's funny. This other article, those are the facts. And then GigaOm did a top three takeaways. And number one was, shocker, Leo Apakather may have been right. Remember, he wanted to get rid of the PC division and go into software.
Yeah.
And the one thing that grew was software. PCs fell 25%.
Jeez.
Yeah. Also, his second takeaway was the printer cash cow is drying up. Don't tell me that. That's how I make a living. Yeah, so printer total revenue fell like 7%, and I don't understand what this is, but yeah, so the big deal is like, is printing is going down, and the big question is it secular or is it cyclical? There we go.
Is it secular?
Secular, that's the term that we throw around. Term is structural.
Okay.
Is it like so secular being the idea like, is there some sort of cultural shift that is causing the trend, as opposed to like cyclical? So you have like seasonal trends, right? Those are ones where they're typically within a very short.
Yeah.
We all know what seasons are. Secular, or yeah, I can do this. Not secular, the other one. Cyclical is more of they're long-term trends, but there's still these ups and downs. Oftentimes we'll talk about it in terms of the business cycle. There'll be like 3 or 4 years of up, then 3 or 4 years of down, 3 or 4 years of up, But it's this longer thing. And then within that are these seasonal changes. And then there's like this secular, structural, whatever, which is kind of the overall trend. So yeah, there's these lines that are going up and down, and then there's little lines that are going up and down. But then there's also this overall overarching trend of where it's all headed. And so the big question is, all right, so it's going down. Is that a secular, seasonal, or secular?
So the obvious answer is that it's secular, right? People aren't printing as much because they have iPads and Google tablets and Microsoft tablets. I know you don't want to hear that, and I know HP doesn't want to hear that, but I feel like anybody who's paying attention at all, that's the obvious answer. You know, it may pick up again.
Here is the James Furlow opinion on it. This is weird because I actually study this stuff, but this is my opinion. Do this stuff.
And let me give my analysis then.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I'll just nod. I'm kidding. I will be stoic.
All right. Okay.
Very
so this is
thoughts, Matthew.
This is what my thoughts are. A little bit of engineering, control systems. If you're aiming for a target, you always have a target, whatever you're trying to control to. And ideally, you would hit that target and you would stay there. For example, the classic example is a thermostat in your house. You're at 60 degrees, you set your thermostat for 70 degrees, and the heater turns up. It goes up to 75. The heater turns down. It goes down to 65. It turns on, and there's a cycle. And then when you change it, okay, it's still too cold. You change it to 80. Now the heat is going to shoot up to, there's going to be another trend, and there's going to be ups and downs, in this classic control systems. So part of it is going to be seasonal. A small section of it, you're going to see fluctuations just because that's the nature of your business, of any business. Part of it is going to be longer cycles, just the nature of companies trying to, there's a certain part of it. And so I guess what my point is printing is down right now, and it will return, but I really strongly doubt that it will return to the levels that it once was. I think it would be my guess that you're over the hill, and that what you're going to continue to see is it keeps falling and coming back and falling even more and coming back and falling even more. And so the general trend will be downwards. And so, yeah, this is a particularly bad quarter, and it may not look as bad next quarter, but when you add up all your quarters together over the next 10 years, people will stop printing because that's what we're not doing anymore. And I think that there's a real leapfrog frog technology going on, where it's like, you know, there's still huge chunks of humanity, you know, billions of people in Asia who don't print, but there's also billions of people in Asia that don't have landlines, and they're just leapfrogging over landline phones to cellular phones because that's where technology is at. And I think what you're going to see is the same thing with paper, is that by the time industry really starts to, as industry continues to really build there, it's going to make sense for them to skip the printing phase and just jump straight into touch tablets, because the technology will already be there, and be well developed and affordable. So I think what you're going to see is, yeah, you know, you might have other markets you can expand into, and there might be still growth left, but overall, it's a technology that's not continuing. It's not changing anything, and if it's not changing and it's not growing, it's dying. You know,
those are very interesting thoughts, Matthew. Man, I guess the only, like, I'll tease you with this idea. We spent a significant amount of time talking about how Google Docs was not going to overtake Office anytime soon, because there are inherent advantages that Microsoft Office has over Google Docs, even though Google Docs has one very clear, obvious advantage over Microsoft Office. I think there's a lot of analogies that you can use in this situation too. With that statement, I do not give any indication of the timing. So the other thing that they talked about we gotta be careful, dude. I gotta be careful. You don't have to be. You can try to push me all you want.
Well, I'd rather not be the one who gets you fired. But I'll try to push as close to the edge as I can.
I appreciate that. The other thing that they talk about, or that in the earnings call, and I don't really know how they're going to do this, honestly, and they actually do this, they call it an HP conundrum. HP wants to double down on R&D while cutting costs. By the way, you're totally muted, and that's awesome. For those of you who don't know, he is currently chewing ice, but you don't know, which is sweet. Anyways,
thanks for pointing it out to everybody.
I just was giving you that feedback. So they need to try to double down on R&D while cutting costs. And it's this idea, right, it's so hard, where it's, we need to invest in R&D. We need to find that next big thing, next billion-dollar thing to sustain our business. But in the meantime, we need to figure out a way how to cut back on our current businesses so that we don't, you know, keep hemorrhaging money. I don't know how they're going to do that. I mean, I have some guesses. Honestly, if it were me, I would say something like, you know what? We'll pick on inkjets, because I'm not in that business. I would say, let's let the inkjet business, let's cut back on R&D. Let's stop making new printers. Let's just improve on what we currently have. Maybe roll out a new one or two one each year. And let's significantly cut the R&D budget of that and focus it somewhere else. yeah. on some new potential technology. I mean, that's how you cut costs while doubling down on R&D. I also think she's still just new enough on the job that she's not willing to make huge waves within HP, but it'll happen, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know either.
I don't know. It's tough. HP used to be such big innovators. They have such a history of innovation, and it has been the reason why they've been such a successful company. But it's hard to
gotten really good at what I would call micro innovation, or I think a lot of people call it like evolution. Doing these small iterative things where you go, oh, that's a cool little innovation that you did there. You figured out a way to make the volume button work better. I don't know. Something like that. But HP hasn't been focusing on what I would call the macro innovation. Really just putting things on the head and, taking this big step out and saying, we're going to do this and we're going to see how this goes. Because we think the world's heading this direction. I haven't seen that yet in a while.
And also another thing that, because it's, your labs do cool stuff, really cool stuff sometimes.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Sometimes, like, I mean, I think it was, oh, man, it might have been 2 or 3 years ago now.
It was a while.
But it's, the whole memristors thing, there's always been three core components of a circuit. There's resistors, capacitors, and inductors, and there's always been a theoretical fourth that mathematicians were able to prove, but no one ever figured out how to build one, and HP was the first people to build one. We don't know what to do with them, but hey, they're here. And that's,
that's cool. That's
the other side of it, is it's very cool and it's very exciting, but didn't exactly make you any money either. And I think that's, that's the problem with exploration, is that, exploration does not make sense. It's that classic, why would we go to Mars? Why would we go to the moon? We can look at them. It's too expensive. It doesn't make sense. Well, that's the thing. You don't know what you're going to find when you get there. I can't tell you why this is going to make money. I can't tell you why this is a good idea. You just kind of have to spend a lot of money and hope. And oftentimes, you get there and you may go, man, we just spent a lot of money and we did not find gold in the new world. but occasionally, you find a new world and it's, it makes all the difference. So, I don't know. That's a scary precipice to be standing at, knowing that you have to adventure on and start changing or get left behind, but yet not really being able to afford to go and to take that leap, trying to figure out how to do that. I'm actually thankful that I'm not in that position, even though she probably gets paid quite well to try to figure out how to move forward. I don't know if I would enjoy that stress.
She's not in an easy spot. But I knew HP is full of super smart, awesome people. I get to work with them every single day. And, if there's a group of people that can figure it out,
it's Apple.
They're there.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. That was mean. Yeah, no, you guys have a great legacy, and obviously there's tons of really smart people, so... I think HP is capable of doing it. It's just a question, really, of getting the leadership and the go ahead to start exploring again.
Yeah, and she's saying the right things. So.
Yep, I agree.
It might happen, and then in 2013, 2014, we'll see the fruits of that effort.
Woo! Hey, man, better late than never.
Yeah. Guess. So, I'm going to switch topics a little bit here. I'll talk about gaming because I just thought this was interesting. And it says that we're missing a link right now from the core-focused free-to-play. Okay? So, you're like, Tomato what? I don't get that.
Yeah, that's so, exactly what I'm thinking.
Think Zynga and Farmville.
Okay.
They have proven that microtransaction-based free-to-play games are not just limited to places like China and Korea. So before Farmville, you know, this idea of like, oh, play for free, no big deal. Oh, you want to build a little faster? That's going to cost you 20 cents. Oh, you want to buy this special building and get some gold? That's going to cost you a buck. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah. No,
microtransactions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
In-app purchases, I think, is what you would call them on mobile devices. So Zynga has proven that, you know, for casual games, totally works. You can make not a bazillion, but you can make a couple $1 billion at least. 1.1 to be exact, in North America to do it. But what's interesting is that there's also the same functionality for core gamers or core games, not just light games. So these
would be, let me just make sure.
Yeah.
You would use the term, would you say hardcore and core are synonymous terms? Serious gamers,
yes.
Guys that play Modern Warfare and Legends of Zelda and your big titles, your $50 titles.
Yeah. Okay. World of Warcraft.
Right.
You know, that's people who are going to invest, like, they're going to play hours at a time.
Right.
Those people. I wish I had another, like, actual example. But there aren't a lot in the United States. And it was just very fascinating saying, like, there's an opportunity in the U.S. for this because they have a cool little graph here on it where it says for light games, literally the U.S. is, I don't know, it makes up a quarter of the global revenues for, once again, it's like those light free-to-play games. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
However, when it comes to those core free-to-play games, the U.S. is like less than 10% of that percent. And here's the crazy part. So for globals, for light free-to-play games, they like the total global revenue is like $3.2 billion per year. But for the core gamers, like so once again, these are hard, as you would call them, hardcore gamers or games that have their free-to-play and they just have like in-app purchases. It's more like a $7.5 billion business.
Wait, so what was the difference in values?
So the light one's like 3.2.
Yeah.
Core is like 7.5.
Okay. So it's not actually a huge difference. It's about one is twice as big as the other.
Yeah. Yeah, but the U.S. Proportion of it is puny.
Oh.
So, yeah, so I'm not doing a great job with numbers. The whole thing here, here's the takeaway. There is a huge market for core games that use the free-to-play with in-app purchases model. And so far in the U.S., no one has really figured that out, how to do it yet. Zynga has clearly figured it out for the what I would call casual games, but...
No one's done it yet
for the hardcore games.
So I have a thought on this as somebody who uses Reddit and hears about all sorts of complaints all the time. I think right now what you have is I don't see necessarily any principled reason why I don't see any structural reason why you can't have free games with in-app purchases that allow you to get advanced for hardcore gamers. Outside of the fact that I think there's a certain zeitgeist right now that hardcore gamers, core gamers, people who are willing to spend $50 in a video game, there's a real trend against that. I actually have a feeling that it has less to do with any structural reason why that happens, and more of just a kind of societal gut feeling. And I think, and this is how I'm going to try to sum it up, I think hardcore gamers in that I've known and that I've seen in general, there's a feeling that you should, in order to be really good at a game, you should be able to just get where you're going by skill. If you're playing World of Warcraft, it's hugely frowned upon if you build up a character and you sell that character to somebody else. Now, obviously, there's a market for that, but it's looked down upon because you didn't earn it. You didn't do your part. You didn't work really hard. In the game Team Fortress 2, which is a free-to-play online competitive game brought to you by Valve through Steam. I'm a big Steam fan. This is actually, I think, a perfect example. The only thing that they sell, or one of the only things that they sell, because they make quite a bit of money off of it, is hats. They're decorations. They don't have any skills. And you can buy weapons that have different things, but you can also play the game and build weapons based on what you pick up. And so I don't actually know very many people that bought weapons. They all buy hats, but none of them buy weapons. They buy decoration, but they don't buy things that will actually help improve your skill. And I think what it comes down to is it's sort of a machismo, I'm tough enough where I'm good enough where I can beat the game without having to spend money to cheat. I feel like hardcore gamers feel like paying money to advance yourself in a game is like cheating. And games where there is no option to just beat it based purely on skill, it's offensive. In order to get ahead, in order to win, I have to spend money. Wow, this is a stupid game. The only games that are worth the challenge are the games that, yeah, sure, you can get ahead without spending money, but you have to play really hard. And then people will spend oodles and oodles and oodles of time playing and getting ahead via that method.
Yeah, and I guess listening to you, it would be nice to, like, I wish they would throw in data on, like, downloadable content, because I think that's where they figured out, which, by the way, it's not free to play to start with, but they make a significant chunk of money off of DLC. And that's where you go, yeah, you put in the time, you put in the effort, here's a reward, here's another level, here's a character or whatever.
Right. And I think downloadable, I know that downloadable content's also a real annoyance for gamers right now as well, because it's like I paid, especially for paid games, but even for non-paid games, why can't you just give me the whole game and let me play it? Why do we have to play this game?
I don't know. Gamers... I like the idea. If I don't want it, I don't have to get it. If I don't want to play $50, let's make the original on sale for $15. And if I buy all of the DLC, it's going to cost me, I don't know, whatever the numbers are up to now, $60. That's cool. And if I want to get the whole thing, sure, I'll do that now.
And I think, like I said, I don't think there's any structural reason. I think you're right. I think long term that opinions will trend that way. But I definitely think right now that the community of American gamers, of Western gamers specifically, whether that be Australia or Europe or America, I realize that that's not just, West, because it's a 3D plane, whatever. I think that there's a real trend, or there's a real, a spirit of that's against the spirit of the game. They don't like that. They don't like that idea. They think it kills the enjoyment of the game, as opposed to being something that's financially beneficial. You only pay for what you want. They want the whole bundle. They want everything or nothing, which is interesting, because it is so. It's not what's going on in the music industry. It's not what's going on in the rest of the entertainment industry. People want to, they want to pay for as little as possible, unbundle everything, and I'll just pay for what I need when I need it. Whereas in the video game industry, they're like, no, if I could pay $150 and have the game, every sequel and every expansion and all the downloadable content, but I'd have to pay $150 up front, great, I'll pay $150. I think that's where they are right now. And I think that that's, I think that that's why you're seeing that gap, is because right now gamers want everything bundled. And I don't think it has to do with financial sense. I think it has everything to do with, you know, of with just the culture of the, of I don't want to have to prove myself by paying for it. I want to be able to prove myself by playing.
I wish there was a, I don't want to say wish, but I wonder if, like, the movie industry and the newspaper industry, they look at that, the video, the hardcore gaming industry, and just be like, how do we get that back?
Yeah. Because,
you know, they've clearly lost it, and like you were saying, you know, the hardcore game industry, they've got it, and people are like, yeah, give me a subscription, please. You know, Steam, super popular. Heck, I'll even pay, you know, more per game. Actually, there's a prescription for Steam, but you know what I mean. It's just kind of, I don't know. There's this concept. They want everything bundled, and cable companies and newspaper companies, they're losing that. Which I guess has to do with value, but I don't know. That's an interesting thought. I don't have any cool conclusion. But.
My thought would be, I think the video game industry is going to trend towards unbundling stuff, but I think right now it's all about the bundle, you know. And I think it has everything to do with the competitive nature of video gaming right now. But
gotta have competitive news reading, I guess.
Yeah. Or, you know, competitive music listening.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, Google Music's not living up to expectations. That's the long and short of this article.
To whose Google, expectations?
Everybody's. Google's disappointed by it. So that's actually what's interesting about this. The thing's only been out for like a quarter, as in like an official platform. The beta's been out a bit longer, but basically nobody's using it. One of the things that's really frustrating is that Google basically is saying, if Google can manage to convert just 10% of their device owners into Google Music users, that would mean 20 million customers. Boom, snap. Wow. But people aren't using it for reasons that people aren't excited about it. And obviously it's very early on. Google hasn't done any hardcore marketing campaigns to get people on board with it.
Well, that's because they don't have any of the big time labels, or they don't have all of them.
Right. And so there's not a lot of movement towards it. And the problem is exactly what you just pointed out. The labels are trying to, so they've got this weird, really really frustrating relationship with Apple. Apple's the dominant player. Apple doesn't care about how much money they make. They really just want a product that is going to leave them, they want the music prices in the iTunes store to allow them to continue to be the dominant player. And so as the biggest music seller, they're the 700-pound gorilla, and they're going up against the music labels, and the labels are finding that they're getting beat up and down the court by Apple. And so really what the labels would really like to see happen is they would really like to see another platform come out, another online sales that's really competitive with iTunes, and really gives people another option. And that way the music labels can pit the two different music communities or music vendors against each other, and slowly jack the price back up so they can make more money and get more lucrative deals for themselves. So they put a lot of hope and expectation in Google because of Android's user base. I think there was kind of a feeling that, Google Plus came on, they announced Google Plus, and people flocked towards it for the first, you know, few months. And then it sort of died off, but, you know, people are still using it, it's still building, and over time, even if you don't really use it, it's still going to be a platform that you're going to get more and more integrated into, as we've talked about before. The problem with Google Music is that they kind of expected that there'd be this flocking of everybody would do everything they could to get – everybody was just itching to get away from iTunes, and they were looking for the first music locker that allowed them to buy music and have control over their playlists, and they just wanted out of iTunes so bad, just like people wanted out of Facebook so bad, and turns out nobody wants out of iTunes, which it's not really that surprising to me. Especially in the last few iterations of iTunes where they've really improved performance. And it's so cheap and convenient, and so many people are already invested in the ecosystem. But it's just interesting because it's, you know, this to me is classic corporate opera of, you know, you got a product, they're trying to build these relationships between different industries and trying to build competitive products against each other. And so there's a lot of people that are really rooting and fighting for Android to step up and get awesome, and it's just not happening. So my question is, if you want to talk about it for a little bit, is what will Google have to do to make Google Music a real player in the market?
I don't know if I have a good answer for that. I mean, obviously they got to get Warner Music Group on board so they have a good
catalog
library, which is good because, I mean, when they first launched, you couldn't even buy a song.
Yeah.
It sounds like, you know, it's going to come embedded on all of their phones and all of their tablets, and so you'll have the player built in. That'll encourage people to do it. You know, it'd be cool too. I don't know. I guess with their new privacy policy, they could start doing this where, you know, they'll know if you have an Android phone and if you've used it recently, and they could give you a little prompt on the, I don't know, pick a website, on Gmail or the main Google page or somewhere where they say, hey, we have this Google beta project. Click this button and we'll start indexing your songs so you can play it anytime, anywhere. And then they have a little plugin. And that just sits in your tray, and anytime you know, it just starts up automatically and just does it. But it's also like connected to Chrome, you know, it's not a standalone.
Yeah.
Because and you know, that's assuming you have Chrome, I guess.
Which.
It's not a bad assumption. I guess so. So the problem that they're having right now is that they're similar to iTunes, and as long as you're only similar, you're not going to displace them. You have to be markedly better.
Yep. That's my thought.
There's no markedly better part about them. I mean, I've used Google Music. Man, I guess that was, like 8 months ago?
Yeah.
And, I mean, my biggest problem was, it uploaded everything, but it didn't do all of my playlists. It didn't do any of my smart playlists, which I pretty much almost always only use those. And it couldn't differentiate between the different types of media. So a lot of
metadata.
Meta, thank you. A lot of that was lost on them for some reason. And so it made it very difficult to sift and sort the way that I wanted to. There was the whole lag thing, but whatever, I can get over that. I don't know, there was just something about it, it just wasn't quite as smooth. And, I mean, it was cool, I can literally type in it into my browser and start listening to music right now. That's a cool feature.
Yeah. Okay, my problem is I paid the $25 for Google or for iTunes Match, and I think it's awesome. I think it's wonderful. I think it's great. So for me, it's like, man, I don't see any competitive reason. You know, it's like, yeah, I agree though. I think it's like there's, you know, the only thing they have going for them is their install base. And maybe that's enough, you know, maybe that's enough. Maybe just the fact that they have it will get people to move towards it. That it's easy, that it's built in, that it's quick. But I definitely get the feeling that, it's going to be hard to talk people into doing it.
Well, it's kind of weird, too. Like, this is going to sound crazy, but I think from a product standpoint, they're trying to compete against iTunes. But from a consumer perception standpoint, because it's, quote, a cloud-based music player, they're actually competing against Pandora and Spotify.
Yeah. Yeah. That's another weird part. Yeah.
You know, and so it's they're going against these, what I would call, subscription services. And I don't know. There's something about Pandora's awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's another great thing.
I'm having trouble articulating, or wrapping my head around their problems, but
that's another great point. I totally use Pandora more than I use iTunes. You know, and I own a lot of music, and I use Pandora more than I use iTunes.
the cool thing about Spotify, right, is like it'll scan your iTunes library for you. So it goes, all right, here's all your songs. Plus, you can say find a related song to this one, and it'll do more of a Pandora type of thing.
I've never actually used Spotify.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's
do I have cool to service. Connect? Do I have to connect it to Facebook?
I don't know. Probably not. I don't know. I don't remember.
Because this actually was my turnoff, and this is so stupid and funny. But I remember because I thought one of the requirements was that Spotify is actually their deal. One of the reasons why they're able to do what they're doing is because they're integrated with Facebook, and they've got
maybe that is it.
And they've got, you know, this the backing of Facebook to go with everything, to kind of take the financial burden of being able to do all these things from a licensing perspective. And what that means is that everybody knows all the music I listen to all the time, which I'm more than willing to listen to all of my music with you. At the same time, like, you know, I don't necessarily want everybody knowing every time I'm listening to Rolling in the Deep by Adele, you know, like, whatever. Sometimes, you know, sometimes it's just a personal thing. You know, whatever. Leave me alone. I think it's funny. My music choice is one of the few places where it's like, I do actually want just a smidgen of privacy. And because I'm so satisfied with Pandora and iTunes, I have no desire. I actually want to protect that privacy just a tad.
So I was looking, and it says that you do require Facebook login to use Spotify, but you could always create a dummy Facebook account.
Oh, jeez, that sounds.
I know. Well, I'm just, you know.
I appreciate that. You're trying to help.
So I, you know, if you wanted to try it out, but. No, and I don't. Maybe you can turn off the sharing thing.
Maybe. I don't know. Okay, I'll have to look into it.
So anyway, so the whole thing, Google Music, I don't know. I'm having trouble characterizing what their problem is, and therefore I don't know if I can come up with a good solution on how to fix it. But it's just, I mean, at the end of the day, it's not as good of a product as iTunes, and it's not as good of a product as Pandora, and it's not as good of a product as Spotify. And, you know, that's their fundamental problem right now. Yeah, it is cool that it will upload your music and you can play it anywhere. Amazon does the exact same thing and is probably experiencing the same level of success, i.e. very little.
Yeah.
And I don't know. There's just, for whatever reason, when people think going to the cloud, that's not what they have in mind. They don't have a digital locker or music locker in mind.
Yep.
For whatever reason, they think Spotify.
Yep.
And I don't blame them, quite honestly, because I think that's, you know, that's a good way to do it.
Yep. I agree. I think technologically Spotify makes a lot of sense. It just, you know, like I said, it's, for me, it's just a weird privacy thing of, I don't want, you know, but I guess I do that with all my websites. You know, I don't want Google, or I don't want Facebook telling everybody all this, what I'm doing online all the time. Which, once again, I'm not exactly sure why. I don't actually mind Facebook knowing. I just don't want all my friends knowing.
I see.
So, yeah. So, anyways, it's getting kind of late in the show. So, I... So do we want to just tease this for next week? Because I think this is an important one, and I think it's going to take a long time to talk about. I think it's
all right. Tease it.
I think
it.
It's good. Okay. So next week, this came late in the week, but it's a big one. President Obama has introduced what he calls the, or what they're calling, the Consumer Privacy Bill of Rights. It's a set of, it looks like, 10 different rights that they believe are your rights as consumers, that you have certain rights as consumers when it comes to your personal data and the companies that are using it. And I think it would be great to, this is such a big topic right now, and I think James and I, you know, obviously we kind of tend towards not minding privacy, generally speaking. But I think, you know, we'll go through each of the different rights that you have, some of their implications, and what we think about all that. So next week, get excited.
All right, I'm pumped about that.
Me too.
Wow, they have a lot of share buttons going down the side of their column.
Yeah, they do. I might find a better article, and by might, I mean
I am knee deep in like website design stuff right now, and so I'm all this stuff is catching my attention because I'm just thinking about it.
I understand.
All right.
Cool.
All right. Which also coincidentally, there's my weekly update.
Oh yeah, my weekly update. I bought Minecraft. What a mistake. That game is fantastic.
Really?
It's fantastic. Oh. It's so much fun. I spent so many hours that I should have been doing homework playing it.
Yes.
I was building a skyscraper, and once you start building a skyscraper, you can't just stop building a skyscraper until it's scraping the sky. And, you know, of course, that was all the time I should have been doing discrete math. It wasn't. So I guess who gets to stay up late tonight because I spent Saturday playing Minecraft. So...
That was also a smart decision of your time management there.
I know, it's wonderful.
Hey, you got an app in today. I mean, that's cool.
I know. I should have been doing my homework. but
that's all right. Well, Matthew, I'm going to let you go do your homework. Thank you, everybody else, for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my brother is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time. Technology.
Not as much as you see.
Always and forever.
No, you messed it up.
I did?
Yeah, you skipped like an entire line. It's how I love technology, not as much as you see. Still, I love technology. Always and forever.
technology.
That's like the funny part of it.